What's a Call?
Beyond blue horizons, far at the world's end, strange, fascinating lands beckon us, bid us revel in their exotic splendors. Come with us as we head for Ports of Call. Northward, through the Irish Sea, our giant steamer carries us swiftly toward our port of call, Scotland. The distant hills are purple with fragrant heather. The sodden mists of morning lift to reveal a shore of crags and cliffs, with here and there the dimming beacons of lighthouses, fading into the dew-dampened dawn. Off to starboard, we see a village, where in the quiet splendor of simplicity, early rising farmers and merchants are making ready for another day. That village is Ballantrae, famed in fiction by Robert Louis Stevenson. On toward the north, our ship glides silently through the Firth of Clyde, past Greenock, past Dumbarton, finally into the muddy, sluggish waters of the River Clyde. As two tiny tugs guide us into our berth between two great piers, we see ahead a modern, busy city. Great Gothic spires point heavenward, guarding and guiding the millions of souls who bustle along in sturdy activity below. Fine parks, broad boulevards, electric lights, street railways and subways. All the evidences of 20th century civilization greet our fascinated gaze as we realize we have reached our port of call, Glasgow, the mightiest and most important city of old Scotland. But all this activity of modern times fades away in the soft half-light of the magnificent Gothic cathedral in the northeastern part of Glasgow. Dating from the year 1240 A.D., this great edifice has been the scene of many an important event, not the least of which occurred in 1306. A solemn-visaged, intense, vigorous man stands within a small anteroom by the side of a beautiful, sympathetic woman. They are the stalwart Scot, Robert Bruce, and his gentle wife, Elizabeth.
It winna be long, no, Rob.
Nay. Not long before you and I are King and Queen of Scotland.
Oh, Rob, are you certain this is the right course to pursue?
I know not, miss. I know not. My friends all told me they will stand behind me whate'er occurs.
Edward of England is a powerful monarch, Robert.
Aye, weel, I ken that.
Rob, I want you to know that no matter what happens, I will always be by your side, wishing you the best of success, praying for you.
Oh, good, Bess. Good, lass. I know full well that you, at least, are loyal to me and to Scotland. Ah, Lindsay of Crawford.
Everything is prepared, sire.
Sire. Sire. That is a strange-sounding word. Come, then, to the throne. Lindsay, is that not Wishart, the Bishop of Glasgow?
Aye, it is, sire.
With the consent of four bishops, five earls, and the people of the land, I place this crown upon thy head and crown thee Robert I, King of Scotland. I place this crown upon thy head, and thus crown thee, Elizabeth, Queen of Scotland. May God in his omnipotent wisdom bless thee, and bring into thy hearts the power for great good works. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thus, Robert Bruce and his good wife Elizabeth first wore the golden circlets which were the crowns of the sovereign rulers of the Scots. But, though their cause seemed right, the way was to be long and difficult. Hardly had Robert ascended his makeshift throne than a skirmish took place between his forces and the superior army of Edward of England at Methven. Bruce was twice unhorsed and once actually captured, to be rescued by his brother-in-law, Christopher Seaton. The battle ended, and a bedraggled little party escaped to the woods of Athol.
Hold! Where is Kirkpatrick?
He is waiting at the fork of the road for news, sire.
News?
A messenger from Edward told us the King of England is sending you a decree, sire.
Decree? Aye. From the King of England? Elizabeth.
Aye, Robert.
I have made plans for you. You and our daughter are to be escorted by some of the older knights to Kildrummy Castle. You will all be safer there than we us.
I meant what I said, Rob, when I told you I would stay with you, always.
I know. That Louvre really means more to me than you'll ever ken, Bess. But for the sake of your crown, you must hide for a wee time.
Oh, Rob, what will become of us all?
Oh, our cause is just, Bess. We are the symbols of Scottish liberty. If we are not faith in our own strength, that cause will be lost.
I'm sorry, Rob. I promise you I will have faith.
Truly, you're a queenly person, Bess, and I love you for it.
Here is Kirkpatrick, sire.
Ah. And what is the news, Kirkpatrick?
King Edward has issued a proclamation decreeing that all persons who should harbor traitors to the throne of England are to be hung.
Ah, then he means the entire of Scotland, for our people are loyal, and if it be necessary to harbor any of us, they will do it. See that the women and the old men are started on the way to Kildrummy. When we have won our fight, Bess, I will come for you. To horse and forward!
The years dragged on, 8 turbulent years. Finally, on a desolate little island off the Antrim coast, spending the severe winters in a hovel in the wilds of Arran, Robert Bruce lies upon his bed of dry heather.
Sire?
Huh? Oh, islands, eh?
A messenger has just rode in with news of the English.
What news?
King Edward is dead.
Edward? Dead?
Aye, sire. At Birch on Sands in Cumberland. His son is no Edward the Second.
It is a bitter word to say, Lindsay, but this is a boon to Scotland.
Aye, sire, I ken.
Look there.
What do you see?
A spider up there on the rafters.
A spider?
Aye. That beastie, my friend, is Robert Bruce, King of the Scots.
I ken.
No, wait. 6 times he had tried to swing himself by his fine web through that rafter to this one. 6 times he had failed. 6 times I had tried to free Scotland from the yoke of English oppression. And 6 times I have failed. No, in this dire hour, I watched this spider. A few minutes ago, I was ready to give up the ghost.
Yes, I
was. Aye, I was. Kildrummy have fallen, and my wife and bairn, where are they? Seaton, Fraser, gone. Athol sent to trial. My brothers, Alexander and Thomas, both captured and killed.
I ken, sire.
I have been beaten from Methven Hill to Loudon. 6 times. 6 times, Lindsay. Like this wee spider. If that beastie be successful in hanging his thread to this rafter, then I will take it as a sign that Robert Bruce shall be successful. Watch. Watch, Lindsay, watch. No. There he's done it. And we shall do it too. Call a council of war. Let Edward II bring every man he has. And we will fight them where they may. This is the time for Scotland to strike.
The odds are great against us, sire.
Aye, Lindsay, but ours is the righteous cause, and for the rash, aye, God will fight.
Then shall I call the men to order?
Aye, I would speak to them.
Aye. Ho! Horseback!
Hold! Lindsay would speak!
Noble
men of Scotland! Here is your king, Robert Bruce!
As you prepare yourselves for the fray this day, I call to your minds that England is fighting for conquest. Scotland for liberty! There will be no mercy shown a conquered people this day. If there be aught among you who is not prepared to conquer or deal with your king, then he may leave the field. Then we stand together. Remember your manhood, Azur. Remember the insolent brags of England's king. I call on you, bring victory to the cause of Scotland. No, kneel in silent prayer to your God. Are you prepared for the fray, Scots? Then forward!
There, you're sadly wounded, sire.
Nayland's there. I'm yet alive.
Sire.
Aye?
I have brought to you a prisoner I have taken in the battle.
Who?
The Earl of Hereford, head constable of England.
What?
Aye. He seeks mercy, sire.
Mercy? I would talk with him.
He is here, sire.
Oh. The Earl of Hereford, you would seek mercy for your hands?
I do. My office to entitle me to such consideration?
Aye. Then, my lad, there'll be two persons in the hands of your king who also are entitled to such consideration.
Whom do you mean?
Elizabeth of Scotland, my queen, and my daughter.
I understand.
You may make it known to your king that when the Queen of Scots and Albania return to their own country and to the throne, then the Earl of Hereford, High Constable of England, will be returned to his country.
I shall communicate your decrees at once.
You may retire with your prisoner, Lindsay.
Aye, sire.
And sick of weariness of evil. Well, this is the work of a king. But at least they may say of Robert Bruce, when he had ganged to his God, Scotland is free.
Thus was founded a long line of kings bearing the noble name of Bruce. Down the years they marched. David II, Robert II, he who became the first Stuart on the throne of Scotland, then all the Stuarts bearing the name of James, from first to fifth. And then, in 1542, when James V died at Carlaverock Castle, his infant daughter ascended the throne under the regency of her mother. Sent to France for her education, the little girl later was married to the Dauphin, who died 2 years later, leaving her a widow at the age of 18. Sponsored by her infamous uncles, the princes of the bigoted and bloody House of Guise, tutored under the guidance of her diabolical mother-in-law, Catherine de' Medici, reared in the corrupt court of France, returned to the land of her birth to assume her rightful duties as sovereign, what could have been expected from her rule save plots and counterplots, intrigues, intolerance, and the spilling of blood from the racked bodies of those who stood in her way? This was the beauteous creature for whom Scottish nobles and peasants fought and died. This was the magnificent woman against whom the reformer John Knox preached from his Protestant pulpit. This was the queen who caused, directly or indirectly, the murders of her advisor and later her husband. This was Mary, Queen of Scots. It is early evening on the first day of February, 1587. In a room at Fotheringay Castle, a woman in black velvet sits at the heavily barred window, watching, waiting, finally.
Oh, come. I expected you sooner, my lord.
I am sorry, milady.
Well?
I bring you dire tidings.
She has signed it.
Her Majesty has finally acceded to the demands of some of her advisers. She placed her signature to the warrant but an hour ago.
So, though I am to die. Please, Shrewsbury, assist me to rise. My limbs are ever weaker.
Certainly, milady.
Thank you. I want to look at the sun for the last time.
Not the last, milady.
When is the execution to take place?
1 week from this day.
Well, no matter. The sun sets for me today. So, Mary Stuart dies. And at the hand of Elizabeth Tudor. Elizabeth has always been jealous of me. She has little reason now, after holding me captive for 18 years. My cheeks are sunken. My eyes are dull and lifeless. My skin is drab and yellow. I cannot walk without help. Not much like the young girl who held court at Holyrood. I am old. Old. But not with years. No. I am only 45. Too young to die. But too old to live. Elizabeth hates me. As Murray hates me. As Darnley hated me. As Riven hated me. But I have had love, too. Rizzio. Poor David. He died for me. And Bothwell. Elizabeth can steal my life, but she cannot steal my memories. 7 days. 7 short days. And 7 long nights. And then, when I mount those bloody stairs, I will have but one thought. Elizabeth cannot always live. And when she dies, my son will be King of England.
Finally, more than 100 years after the execution of Mary, Queen of Scots, the bitter struggle between England and Scotland came to an end. During the reign of Queen Anne in 1706, the last meeting of the Parliament of Scotland was held, and articles drawn up for a final union between the two disturbed countries. And since that time, the history of Scotland has merged into the history of England and Great Britain. In the middle of the 18th century, there was born to humble, swarthy William Burns of Ayrshire, a son destined for all times to epitomize the innate lyric joy of the Scottish soul. He was christened Robert and was the first of 7 children. As he grew into manhood, his only library comprising a booklet of poems and the Bible, he displayed unusual talents for verse writing, and because of his merry, carefree nature, became a prime favorite among the lads and lasses of the countryside. With his brother Gilbert, we see him enjoying the rigorous steps of the Highland Fling, accompanied by the village piper.
You have fallen down and you've dirtied your fine new breeches.
Oh, that Bobby now. It's not my breeches I've dirtied. They're yours.
What?
I bought them for the occasion.
Why, you lummox, I'll pummel you within an inch of your life. Oh, I most forgot.
What? Had you forgot, Bobby Bairn? Not the teeny armor is waiting for you at the stile.
Get along with you. You're a pack of fools.
Oh, well, come on then. We all ken that Bobby Burns is a dull person indeed when his mind is on Jeannie Armour.
My heart's in the Highlands, my heart is not here. My heart's in the Highlands, chasing the deer. Chasing the wild deer and following the roe. My heart...
Oh, Jeannie.
Good morning to you, Bobby.
Oh, Jeannie, I did not see you sitting there on the stile.
Aye, I had noticed that you did not see me.
But no.
No, wait, Bobby. You cannot kiss me yet.
Why? What have I done to know that you're acting like a spoiled bairnie?
I've been thinking that it is awful late that you have not been seeing me.
Ah, Jeannie, do not say such things. You came full well that I love you with all my heart. Do you love me? Do you, Jeannie?
I'm afraid I do.
Afraid? Why should you be afraid of loving me?
Ah, Bobby Burns, 'tis true what they say of you.
What do they say?
That you can win a lass's heart with your verse and with your song, and that after you have won it, you can break it as easily.
I ken what you're thinking. 'Tis about Clorinda.
Aye. Oh, Bobby, if you were to treat me like you had treated her, I could not live. I would die.
Ah, Jeannie, my sweet, sweet love, fear you not. But I have sworn to love and protect ye for aye. And what I promise, that I'll do. Ah, let us be wed, my Jeannie.
Wed?
Aye. We'll be man and wife. Will you marry me, Jeannie?
Oh, aye, Bobby. I will.
Well, what are the tears for? Are you sorry that you're to be Mrs. Robert Burns?
No. I'm not sorry. Tis for joy I'm crying.
Ah, then I went to the kirk, and on the morrow there'll be a new bride in Ayrshire.
Robert.
Aye?
You're packing your clothes.
Aye.
Where are you going, Robert?
To Edinburgh.
Again?
Aye, again.
Oh, Bobby, you have changed so much since you knew the great Robert Burns. You once were so kind and thoughtful.
Stop your sniveling. I'm going away on business. Goodbye, Venu. I'll write you from Edinburgh.
No, Bobby. Then I go away. Oh, Bobby Burns, what have you done to me?
Up and ever up the ladder of fame climbed Robert Burns, his innumerable flirtations always ending in a despair of self-reproach. And what of little Jeannie Armour all this time? Oh, yes, he went back to her. She bore him 4 children. He provided a comfortable home with his income as exciseman for Dumfries. But it was not until about 1795 that weary, sick, tired, he came to an ultimate realization.
Here's your porridge, which the doctor sent him on eat, Robert.
Thank you, Jean.
Have you been writing again?
No. I've been thinking.
Thinking? Oh.
I have been a poor husband to you, Jean.
Oh, nay. You've provided for me and the barons very well, Robert.
That is not what I mean. And you ken for weel. I mean, I have been selfish, arrogant, thoughtless. Careless with my affection.
Oh, let us not talk about it, Robert. I
mun talk about it. But I'm changing my ways, Jean.
You're changing your ways?
You mind the wee verse I writ? To make a happy fireside climb for weans and wife. That's the true pathos and sublime of human life. Remember that one, Jean?
I remember.
'Tis my creed frae this moment on, Jean.
Oh, Bobby, if I could only believe those precious words.
You can believe. You mun believe what I say. Oh, Jeannie, frae this moment on, 'tis for auld lang syne.
The next year, at the early age of 37, Robert Burns died. But he left all true Scots, yes, the whole world, the rich legacy of his lyric verse. Once more, we're back on the River Clyde, at Renfrewshire, where the great shipbuilding yards of John Brown and Company Limited have sent such noteworthy vessels as the Lusitania, the Aquitania, and others down the ways toward the sea. It is a drizzling day in October of 1934, and last-minute preparations are being made for another launching. So far, the huge ship has borne only the numeric title of 534, and the whole world awaits the revelation of her real name. A gray-haired, stately woman stands on a glass-enclosed platform, a bottle of Australian wine in her hand. By her side is a bearded, slightly stooped gentleman in the uniform of Admiral of the British Fleet, and a younger man. These are the monarchs of the British Empire, Queen Mary, King George V, and the Prince of Wales, later to be acclaimed Edward VIII. An official of the shipbuilding company nods his head. Activity ceases. And the stately queen crashes the bottle against the 45,000-ton hull.
I am happy to name the ship Queen Mary.
She presses a button. And the huge black steel bulk begins the descent of the smoothly greased waves to take the water for the first time. The rumble preceding the initial splash is covered by the exultant shouts of 200,000 Britons as they forget the Scotch mist in which they have been standing for hours and throw their umbrellas into the air in wild salute to their queen, Queen Mary, and the graceful ship bearing her name. We're on our own ship now, leaving Scotland once more. The Scotland the world knows today is a land of sturdy, thrifty, stolid people. A land of beauty in its heathered hills and shimmering lakes. And as the crags of the western coast fade once again into the gray mists, we say with Bobby Burns,
farewell, Scotland's bleak domains, far dearer than the torrid plains where rich Ananas blow. All hail then the gale then, waft me from thee, dear shore. It rustles and whistles, I'll never see thee more.
I invite you to join us again next week at this time as we journey to another of the world's fascinating ports of call.